myself. It took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
So the one thing we want to try and organise, I sent out a tweet after this game on Saturday night, can we start a championship restructure that allows Dublin and Kerry play each other every week? What more do we want? Everyone else can be shipped off to another island, play each other, we don't care. Let's watch Kerry and Dublin. Unbelievable forward lines, unbelievable scores. They don't like each other. There's just, the games are action-packed. Both go to beat each other. Both can be a little bit dodgy at the back at times. But that's because they've been attacking philosophies. They've got marquee players, and it just never seems to disappoint, Conan.
Yeah, we should do a tier one and a tier two, and have two teams in tier one, and then everybody else in tier two.
Exactly.
Just have Dublin and Kerry. It's unreal. They've played each other 7 times since 2017. Both of them have won twice, and they've drawn 3 times.
Right.
They were so evenly matched.
Yeah. And Emlyn Mulligan, welcome to the show. Yeah.
Thanks for having me, lads.
And Malie at the end then as well, just to kind of set the pulses racing, almost like a good novel. You get to the very end of the chapter and you're like, I have to go to the next one. Yeah. I want to see these playing each other again, because there's some lads are going at each other. Fenton's peacemaking, you know what I mean? Small has Clifford's jersey and he's doing his best to pull it off his back. And you're just like, give us more.
Yeah, I suppose. And just before that, everybody was kind of talking about Dean Rock shaking Clifford's hand. You know, I suppose, congratulating him on his equalising point, but then a minute later the jersey's been ripped over his head, you know. So no,
but that's just contrast, right? Because that's interesting, because obviously that was a lovely moment with Dean Rock and a free taker respecting another free taker, even though Clifford's free wasn't that hard. Emlyn,
no,
it's just the way he took it made it look spectacular, didn't it? The degree of difficulty he added to that free, that was a standard enough free. I know there was a lot of pressure on it for a left footed taker. No.
Yeah, well, I suppose, listen, if we look back even the week before there with Kilcoo, the equalising point in that, I think it was from a similar position, with probably a bit more pressure being an All-Ireland club final. But for Clifford's standards, it was probably a straightforward free, but it's with the way he kicks it, isn't it? The height he puts on it, the curl he puts on it.
He made it harder than it was, I thought, by the technique he used.
You know, like, it was fully expected. If he missed it, he would have got slated and probably said, how did he miss that, you know? But no, listen, the added pressure that's on him, I suppose, being captain and all that, he stood up to it. But again, it was expected that he put it over.
Yeah. So Dean Rock shakes his hand after it, and that's obviously, like I said, free taker, free taker, respect. And Dean Rock is a gentleman, and he plays football as a gentleman. John Small's not a gentleman, and he doesn't play football as a gentleman, but there's nothing wrong with that either. No. John Small is loved by Dublin fans. I'm a big John Small fan. I don't have a problem with him getting stuck into Clifford, because you can't all be respectful, and you need a Philly McMahon, a John Small, a Ryan McManaman, you know, a player who's the enemy of every one of his opponents, but his own fans love him. And Small's no problem taking on that role. He's no interest in shaking hands with David Clifford. He wants to get stuck into David Clifford. That's right. There's nothing wrong with that, I didn't think.
Yeah, and they're also, like, you know, say Dean Rock and John Small are also completely different players, like
different characters, the whole lot.
Yeah, Rock has to be removed from that a little bit, because he has to keep calming himself down. He stroke over freeze like he does better than anybody, but Small just flicks a switch and he goes into animal mode, and for 70 minutes anything that's moving that's not in a blue jersey is getting nailed, and they're getting nailed hard. So I do respect, and I love watching players who can just sort of go to that other place where they don't give a shit about
it. He wasn't happy until that jersey was coming off. Like,
he really focused on it.
Didn't he?
Maybe just wanted the jersey to give to someone else.
He gave it one last big tug and then just stepped back like he's done. I always say about John Small, he's been sent off in All-Ireland finals, the look of innocence on the chap's face when he gets sent off is like he just can't understand what.
Me?
But there's some of them players that like him. He just plays on the edge, and that's the only way he knows. And as you said, you'd rather play with him than against him. But I suppose all this talk about David Clifford, maybe he's just laying down the marker and saying, you know, maybe the whole media world is respecting you as this and that, but we'll get you again in the summer just to let you know. Do you know, it's about laying down markers too, I suppose. And as you said, he's the fella you want on your team, man.
Yeah, you want to rattle these good forwards. But Clifford wanted no part of the melee. At the start, you know, it's this kind of, I'm holding you, you're holding me, and who lets go first, Emlyn? That's come into the game. It's kind of, I don't know, I'd never get involved in that, because I'm never going to win one of those wrestling matches. So I'd be like, I'd hold my hands up.
Yeah,
some lads trade off kind of being strong and neither of them want to let the jersey go first.
Yeah, like no more than myself. I'd give plenty of it mouth-wise, but I said when it comes to physical battle and fellas are pulling through, I'd be like, just let go of me because I'm not getting involved. You know, there'll only be one winner here, and it won't be me. But
ref.
But some players, as you said, just holding the jersey by the neck, and you know, it's I don't know what they're trying to, I suppose, achieve, but it's coming. It's becoming a lot more common in the game, and I think even again in the Club All Ireland final, there was a bit of it going on with lads just pulling and dragging. But no, I suppose no one hitting a clear slap to any man, but. Yeah. Trying to prove their dominance, I suppose, over one another.
I'd often call the ref. Like, I know it's being a little squealer, but if a lad's giving me this, ref, look.
Linesman, are you watching this?
Why do I want to get back into that with him? Like, I can't win that. You're taking me on in something you're better than me at. I'm just going to squeal on you to the ref.
You know, it's an interesting way of looking at it. Like, you're knowing your limitations. Because I remember going over to shoulder boys before and having rocked them and just sort of laughing at you. It's like, oh, why did I try to do that?
And you're winded, yeah. Avoid those things. Avoid it as much as possible. One thing I will say about John Small is that he's at it a long time now, is diving. And we talked about Ryan McHugh doing it a lot, and he's desperate for when he feels contact going down. Small's in that category now, and people need to watch out for it, because you can't lay a hand on John Small. He's thrown his body back, he's going to ground. I don't like seeing it. I don't know why he does it. He seems to be perfecting it, because he gets away with it a lot. And the black card, he got Graham O'Sullivan turned, started running towards the ball. John Small just ran straight into him, and a big theatrical kind of fallback, and got him sewn up with a black card.
Yeah, but I think that's the way the game's gone too, Colm. Like, a lot of players get any minimal touch at all now, they're going down. I think there's a few examples even in that game. I think there was one up the sideline, Paul Geaney got a bit of a slap on the shoulder and he went down holding his face. So I suppose to single out John Small as the only player that does it would be harsh enough, because a lot of players are doing it. And I suppose in the position that he is, especially through on goal, everyone's looking for that extra added advantage to get a score or something. And I suppose it's not been, I suppose managers aren't probably putting a stamp on it to tell players not to do it, but referees unfortunately are buying into it. And as you said, some players are consistently at it, which isn't, I suppose it's not a nice trait to have, but if it's getting an advantage for Dublin, they're probably happy enough.
It is. Any tackle above the around the chest now is being taken like it's a clothesline in the WWF. You know what I mean? Like, you've been bloody slingshotted back. You know, we talked about this before. It's disappointing. It's hard to know how to finish it, because there has been contact and it's not really that obvious how much there has been. So if somebody goes flying back, it kind of looks like it was a foul, and that's kind of the way it is. I want to talk about the attacking mark, lads. And this attacking mark obviously has to go. I think everybody's going to agree on that, because Paul Mannion got one in the first half, and like, Christ almighty, lads, if you're getting a free shot at goals for a little side foot by Fenton out towards the wing. Michael Murphy got one. You were in Ballybuffet at this one, and he got a mark in the first half. What does that add to our game? Honestly, lads, they're the two marks I want to talk about, because I want to talk about it in positive sense in a minute. But those type of marks do not improve Gaelic football in any shape or form. There is no skill involved in neither the kick pass nor the catch. And now you're getting a free pass at goals. This has to be changed back after this league. And is there scope for them to do that? I think there is. I don't think it's set in stone. It has to be. This is not Gaelic football, and it shouldn't. There is no way should a simple skill of a shitty little kick and a shitty little catch in your stomach be rewarded and the game stopped. What are we looking to change the game to?
Like, that's it. Like, talking about rewarding kicking and catching, like, you're rewarding a fearful pass, like a little dunt 20-yard pass.
And it could even be sideways, Conan. It might not even be a positive fecking kick.
You can hand pass that in your 20 yards. So you're rewarding that, and you're rewarding an easy catch and giving somebody a score, slowing the game down in the process. Like, the attacking mark, like, when people are sort of, they're looking to credit it and say what it can do, they're relying on people not using it and football being played the way it has been played anyway over the last
ignoring
couple of years.
Ignoring it, yeah.
So that's, like, the success is based on it not being used.
Most teams did ignore it. Leash got 4, which is the highest return I've seen. They're picking a team kind of built around potentially getting more out of the mark. Like, they've Colin Murphy out in the half forward line, Kieran Lillis and Evan O'Carroll inside. Kieran Lillis is a midfielder. He got 1-3. We'll talk about him in performance of the weekend. But here's the positive about the advanced mark, Emlyn. So the advanced mark Paul Geaney got, where you're under pressure and you catch that was spectacular enough with the pressure he was under. That deserved the reward. It's Kieran Kilkenny's one. That deserved a kick. And when people see a catch like that, they don't seem to have, we wouldn't really have a problem with them being rewarded for a good catch, because they're being tackled, they've just caught it under pressure. That's why my point is that if the advance mark is moved inside the 21 and kick it outside the 45, the catch will never be simple, because you'll be marked hard in there and you'll have to work for a good catch. And plus, it's guaranteed to be 25 metres in distance, so there's a bit of hang time on it, so you're going to be under pressure catching it. So people won't mind rewarding that. And I don't understand why the hell they changed this bloody mark to, from that to this monstrosity, which is not Gaelic football.
No, I think I can go back to Michael Murphy's one when I seen it, I suppose, in live action, the last. Like, he's coming running out in front of the full back, getting the ball on the 35 in his chest. And the actual crowd were kind of surprised when he put the hand up, because I suppose a lot of people still don't understand where you can get the mark from. Yeah. But like, for a player of his calibre, and I suppose any other day, if the mark wasn't there, he probably would have turned and took his man on and maybe created a goal chance or something. But he took the easy option, rightly so. But I suppose just when you, as you said, when you see it, it's only a 25, 30 yard hand pass onto the chest and you're getting rewarded with a free shot at goal. Like, it's very tough on the defender as well, because when you're especially American likes Michael Murphy, you can't afford to really step out in front of him, because if the ball comes over your head, you're caught. So like, if you're standing a yard off and not trying to get caught, like, how do you mark him? Do you know? And the likes of, as you said, Kieran Kilkenny's one, like, he was rewarded for, you know, a special catch, as you said, doing a skill that's, you know, not easily done.
Yeah.
But some of
and
the,
a good kick, like a good forward positive
kick. A risky kick.
Risky kick. Because if you're outside the 45 to the inside the 21, there is no sideways kick possible there. Mm. You know, there's no shitty little kick possible. It has to be a good kick, because you have to catch it inside the 21. So you're actually adding a few more metres on, you know what I mean, onto it from where you might have to catch it.
But if you just look back, an example, sorry, you know, Willie, but like, if you go back to the All-Ireland final in Donegal, Bet Mayo back in 2012, and it was Carol Lacy put a diagonal ball in top of Michael Murphy. Like, that goal wouldn't have happened now if the game was a play. He probably would have taken a mark. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, so we're going to lose out on special moments, I think.
On that one now, I will say, because that's been used as an example before, Donegal's tactics that day were to hit Michael Murphy the edge of the square and try and get a goal. Yeah. I'm still think Michael Murphy would have gone for a goal. Maybe. Like, you know, personally, because I think Mayo had a weakness there that Donegal had prepared for. Now, if the advance mark was there, you don't know what would happen, but I still think Michael Murphy might have gone for a goal.
But I think that ball should be the ball that's been used for the mark. It's like that diagonal 40-yard pass.
Yeah.
You win it. You have a full right to catch it and claim it and take your mark.
And there's no one in the ground would ever criticise a 30-metre kick being fetched over your head, because look, it's going to be very difficult to catch a ball not over your head from that distance back inside 21. It'll be a spectacular catch. And instead of you being crowded out, you're getting a shot at goal. And now that's improving the game instead of changing what the fundamentals of the game are.
Yeah, because Paul Geaney is a perfect example. He's fallen and he's injured himself in the process of catching it. And it's a great catch. Nobody wants to see four Dublin players stand over him until the ref blows too long.
Yeah, yeah.
They're happy enough to let him get his free and Kerry put it over.
So instead of improving those kind of messy situations in games, rewarding a catcher, a good fetch, and rewarding a good long kick, we're now rewarding shit. Like, we're rewarding something that's not even a skill. Like, this isn't rugby. You shouldn't be celebrated for being able to kick a ball. Like, this is Gaelic football. This is a fundamental of the game. A kick and a catch into your stomach. Like, rugby players are celebrated for catching a ball into their chest. What a great catch. What? He just caught it.
It must be a GA player.
No, but it's true. It must be. I played rugby at under 18 level and it was the easiest game I've ever played. Just catch and kick it. And I was being celebrated for catching the ball here. In Gaelic football, you have to catch it way up over your head. It's really difficult. Do you know what I mean? Like, I mean, Gaelic football is a much more skillful game than being rewarded for catching it into your belly. That's the point that I think we have to make. Turbot from Armagh got a lovely mark from a lovely long outside of the boot by Rian O'Neill, who's brilliant at those. But nobody would have complained about that, even though it wasn't inside the 21. But every mark, if it's outside the 45, inside the 21, will be that type of mark.
Yeah,
it'll be a spectacular mark. You'll be under pressure and you'll deserve your kick at the goal. Yeah. We're kind of, I'm repeating myself now.
The Woolly mark isn't working.
No, but it's not. And you know what? It's nothing to do with the Woolly mark. You know how pissed off I was when you broke that to me that time, Conan? It's just not improving the game.
No,
it's not. It's terrible, terrible. They have to change it. Simple as that, because they've changed the game of Gaelic football to compromise rules.
Yeah.
And it's poxy. They have to change it back. It's very simple. I've seen enough of it. I have. I've seen enough of it.
I agree.
The sin bin, on the other hand, that looks great. It's a much more of a deterrent to cynical play, in my opinion. For example, when... Who was sin bin for Dublin? Eric Lowndes was sin bin for Dublin. Now they're down a back. Now Dublin have to change, bring Scully back to wing back, and they're down a forward. So they had to change the whole shape of their team. Now, a lot of teams say if Kerry lost a back, who would they put back there? They pick a very attacking forward line. Do you know what I mean? Mm. It really punishes the team that gets the black card, Emlyn.
Yeah, big time. But the only thing I think you might see a lot of teams resort back is trying to keep possession then for a lot more without maybe I think
that's a downside on it. But we like we were saying here in the show, we do think they will end up that being a time thing. Rather, you can stop the clock during it.
Yeah,
that's a tweak they need to make.
You know,
to make on it.
But yeah, listen, and I think for the player himself as well. I think any player that might get caught out with a, you know, I suppose a. They might an accidental black card as such. At least they're not completely punished that they're gone for the whole game. You know, it is a 10
there's that as well.
You know, for that element, I think it's very harsh on some players that we've seen over the years that have got a black card after the first few minutes of a game, and you're like, you know, especially in championship, you know, you're training the whole year and you're gone then. But at least it's only a 10-minute period. And again, listen, it's an advantage to the other team that the team are down a man. But it'll be interesting to see how it's utilised, because there's definitely way. I think if you look into it in ways that if you are down that man, that your team's going to look and say, right, try and keep. Don't be forcing play. Don't be losing possession. Try and keep it for as many minutes as we can, and just, I suppose, play down the clock until we get that man back on the pitch.
That's the thing. Like, if you lose a forward, it's not the end of the world. You just lose a forward. It's when you lose a back, and the backs are probably the ones getting a lot of the black cards. Suddenly now there's 10 minutes to go, you're a man down, you have to take off one of your forwards, bring on a back.
Yeah,
like, it's a big punishment. We kind of, when you think you're down to 14, that's the punishment. It's not only the punishment, there's also the punishment of having to rejig your team.
Yeah, no, it's definitely it's way better than what it was. Just bringing on a fresh sub like wasn't a punishment at all. But yeah, I was a bit worried about Dublin for a couple of minutes. They had been keeping the ball, and remember last year it became a bit of a farce where teams just kept it because it's such a big punishment, and they just kept possession. But then I suppose it's up to the other team. They realise we've got an extra man.
Push up,
push the keeper out or whatever. We need to just get that ball back, and we've got an extra man.
Yeah, they don't even need to push the keeper out. They have that extra man. In fairness, Kerry, we'll talk about that in part two. Kerry used Paul Murphy very well as the spare man and forced Dublin into bringing your man Bugler on to mark Paul Murphy. Tipperary, Jack Kennedy for Tipperary got two black cards, so he's not worried about this sin bin one little bit. So he was sin binned, took 10 minutes 15 to 25 minutes in the first half, and then got another black card to get sent off.
Thought it was rolling subs.
Yeah, so Lowndes got the yellow and then got a black and then got a yellow after a black. And to be honest, that happened so fast. His hand was high. I didn't think it was that bad. I thought Philly McMahon was much worse than Lowndes, and he escaped completely. Like, Philly McMahon is like a cat with nine lives. It was a blatant yellow after the black.
Yeah, Philly went in later, right, with his hand. But I think Lowndes was harsh enough. I think Stephen O'Brien was going through him, and he went to tackle, but his hand literally rubbed off.
It's a high
his
hand,
face.
Yeah, it wasn't much in that. Yeah. And again, they're all going down holding their face.
But I think, I suppose it is a free technically, but I suppose as a yellow card, it's harsh enough. But as you said, Jan, in Philly's case, he definitely, when the ball was hit off again, he came in late with the hand in the face. But again, I suppose he plays devil's advocate the whole time. It's not me, ref, and hands up and giving out to the ref over it. But I suppose that's the reaction you have to have to try and to play it down, I suppose.
Make him confused, yeah.
In fairness to Philly, he got a yellow card for doing nothing with David Clifford earlier on. So maybe the ref was being a bit kind to him.
Maybe he was. So you were at Mayo and Dublin, or Mayo and Donegal, and James Carr, who we know can score spectacular goals, he scored a spectacular goal, but he didn't mean it.
No,
right? This is an attempt at a point that was just went into the goals.
Yeah, 100%. I suppose anyone that leads to believe any other needs a recheck. But no, listen, the ball came into him and he turned. And you know that angle, he just coming around an angle. And I suppose he caught with the undersole of his foot and it just dropped short over the keeper's head. And Sean Patton had a chance. But I suppose that goal inevitably kept them in the game. They were very poor in the first half, Mayo. Donegal had an awful lot of wides, a lot of dropped into the keeper's hands. And I suppose that goal did keep them in it, but there's no way he definitely meant it. And I suppose that's probably going on the basis of his incredible goal last year in the championship. People are probably saying, oh, he's well capable of doing that sort of thing, but he definitely didn't mean it.
And I think you have had to play the game to think it, because I've read reports where they said that he scored a great goal. Do you know? And then it was one, the grin on his face afterwards suggested that he might have been going for a pint. He was going for a pint on the turn and caught it too heavy.
100%.
And that was it. Didn't get the contact on it that he wanted at all.
Yeah, the goal suggested that he missed it. Like, there's no way he was going for a goal there. Like,
no.
There was only one place he could have dropped. Like, Sean Patton was looking at it going, come on. Like,
yeah, you know. It was actually poor. You want to be scoring a pint from there on the turn for a good inside forward. Paddy Durkin goal, though, he was going for it. There's only one thing he was going for. Now, he got a deflection of Michael Murphy to send it up. You often see that in soccer, actually. It just, the deflection makes it that bit more spectacular. You need to see it again. What a goal that was. Like, I mean, he scored 1-3 in about the last, brought on in the 66th minute.
Yeah, he just came on as a sub.
James Durkin.
Yeah. I was saying to Conan earlier on, unfortunately myself and my father left with about 2 minutes to go, so I actually missed the goal.
Did you?
Yeah, so I said, we got into the car and they're on the radio and they're like, Declan Bonner will be disappointed with that. And I'm like, come on, next thing.
I'm living.
I think, but there's a lot of people ahead of me, a lot of Mayo fans as well, that wouldn't have realised until I got into the car. But no, listen, in fairness to Mayo, the last 10-15 minutes, they battled hard, actually. And one thing about about them is, and I think, I know Joe Bally said about it, he said something in the paper during the week, he was saying that they go out to win, you know what I mean? And in fairness to the last 10 minutes, they went at Donegal as hard as they could, creating a number of chances. But again, I just don't know how he wasn't pulled to the ground. And a few people have said it, like he broke two or three tackles on the 30, past the D, and then kicked on the 21. He should have been pulled straight to the ground.
Declan Bonner, you'd have to, because that's easy for you to say, right? Because usually managers don't ever say this, they never admit this. Declan Bonner, you'd have to admire his honesty after the game, said it's very disappointing. We're disappointed with our defending in their last play. Someone should have taken a black, red, whatever. I thought we were the better side and should have been more up at half time. We conceded two sloppy goals. There's still a lot of learning for these young lads. He's blatantly saying it. Now, number one, James Durkin, not one of the top level players. He's out around the bloody, not even coming under 21. Black card when he got the ball in his hand wouldn't really be in my head. I'd be like, let him have it. Go on. That's it. There's no goal on here. You know, at what point do you get scared and go, James Durkin's not going to score from there, is he? Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Are you thinking black card with, no disrespect to James Durkin, but like, I mean, let's be honest.
That's fair, because like it wasn't like Donegal were sixes and sevens. Michael Murphy was standing there as well in the middle of
between
the goals.
Between the goals. Yeah. But there was no goal on.
No, it's usually like when they've got a man over, just get him down and get men back. But at this situation, like Donegal seems set. Like, so yeah, that's a fair point. You might not think, but maybe the thing is just give the free away and they're not going to get a goal.
Just give it anyways. Yeah.
I think at that stage of the game especially, I think anything, no matter what, you know, you're a goal down at the end of the day, they're going for a goal. I think, you know, the team at their level should know, there should be a bit more wiser to it. And I think Eamon McGee was doing co-commentary on it with one of the radio stations, and he said himself, he just said, I can't understand how someone didn't pull him straight, pull the head of him and pull him to the ground. Right. Like, you know, I suppose it costs him a point, you know.
James Durkin is 21 metres out. Michael Murphy's between him and goals. There's another player between him and goals. He's being tackled.
Yeah.
We're safe here, right? Emlyn's gone home to the car park.
I wasn't too worried about him, anyway.
There's no goal on here, right? There's no goal. So I would be less critical of them for not taking it. And anyways, we shouldn't be encouraging taking a black or a red or whatever anyways. So, like, I mean, that's the reality of it. Donegal missed a whole load of scoring chances. I think it was five wides and four into the goalie's hands. And I was just thinking, like, this thing can happen in the league, Emlyn. Do you know how many meetings have you had after a game where you kicked a lot of wides and you're like, is this a problem?
Yeah,
it's
no,
not a problem. No. Some days that happens, you know?
And Michael Murphy was, I suppose, the culprit of a few of them, so definitely you can't really question it. But there was a bit of a breeze in the first half too, but I was just saying to Conan as well before we come on, the biggest issue still, I think, for me always is their kickouts. And not being judgmental on David Clark, and listen, he's a massive servant to me over there, but his kickouts, the quality in terms of other Division 1 keepers at the minute, in terms of Sean Patton's, even like he nearly cost him two goal chances. I know he brought off a great save for one. Jimmy Brennan tried to catch him out from another, but it's just they're a consistent looping, a looping kick out to midfielder was putting massive pressure on them, you know. And there was one great example. It was funny. There was, I don't know, did Donegal get a score or wide, but as Michael Murphy was retreating out the pitch, running backwards, Tom Parsons was coming out after him, and Tom kept hitting him, punching him on the chest. He hit him three or four unmerciful hits into the chest. But next thing, Clark just put the ball up on top of Parsons, and Murphy came through him.
Yeah.
And we were all saying, like, it was the worst time to give Parsons that kick out because Murphy was just revved up to take all with him, you know. But it was the kick out that caught Tom. It just sits floating in there, you know. And I suppose Rob Henley's there, and I know I've played with the two of them before with Connacht and that. And in fairness, Henley's kickouts are definitely more of a kind of a ping pass, you know, and they're, I suppose, they come in a quick.
Henley has a kamikaze moment. He's like bloody Pickford from Everton.
But that's what I'm saying.
Like, so he's a good goalie, but he's a mistake in him.
But I just think it's a big thing for me going forward, to rectify that issue. And because as you've seen, like, even Kerry in a couple of moments when the pressure came on to Kerry keeper, give away a couple. Like, at that level, to win All Ireland's, like, you need your 95% kickouts has to be, like, it has to be guaranteed possession.
But this thing, Clark lost 8 of his 17 kickouts. Now, like, I mean, the kick out now is from the 20 metre line.
Yeah.
Why? We've talked about this before. They're all trying to copy Cluxton. It's like, you're not as good as him at that. Cluxton doesn't have as long a kick as you, Clark. Do you see Cluxton copying your long kick? No. Do what you're good at. Drive it.
Yeah.
Bring Murphy off out to the side. Parsons, pretend you want it, break down towards the wing, and you drive it long and have Dermot O'Connor, somebody flicking that on. And I don't understand why all these goalkeepers are constantly copying Cluxton when none of them can bloody do it. Looking at Shane Ryan there, and he's panicking over these kickouts when Dublin pressed them late, and he was shitting it. Drive the bloody thing, don't put them under pressure, you know. This is what Dublin were just waiting for. That anyways, we'll talk about that tactically in part two, so I don't want to get too much into that. We'll move on here, lads, to Division 2, and we have to start with this. and this is Leash. What a draw away to Roscommon. 2:14 to 2:14. Two injury time goals, lads. And by all accounts, this was no less than what they deserved. So Enda Smith scored a penalty in the 61st minute. It put Roscommon 5 points off, 2:11 to 12. In the same penalty incident, Mark Timmins got a sin bin. So he's gone for the rest of the game, pretty much. So they're a man down and they're 5 points down away to Roscommon. Game's over, lads. That's it. No, not Mike Quirk's Leash. Game ain't over at all. We have to factor in quirky time. So Evan O'Carroll apparently gets goal of the season candidate. We didn't see that, even though I have to say League Sunday was excellent last night. Started with Galway and Monaghan, and we'll talk about that in part two with highlights. I was really surprised by that. I thought League Sunday was really good with the highlights they showed. So anyway, as Evan O'Carroll gets goal of the season contender, then Kieran Lillis, better known as a midfielder, who scored 1-3. We'll talk about him in performance of the weekend. He gets a goal. And suddenly Leash get a draw that looked very unlikely, but that they deserved. And Leash winning and Westmead winning have thrown our predictions. And it was only one round, but Cavan and Clare losing. Westmead beating Clare is a huge result for them. And Cavan going down so badly. It's probably between four now to go down there rather than, like, Leash obviously have Armagh next, but that's a great result away to Roscommon.
Yeah, listen, and Roscommon at home especially, you would have expected, but to come back with that scoreline, you know, I suppose, as you said, it was justified by all accounts, and I wasn't at the game myself, but it's a massive point to get away from home. And I suppose with other results going in that division, I think likes of Cavan could be in for a long division too, you know, especially with a few players missing. But hats off to Leash, like you said, like as your name and players, Kieran Lillis, John O'Loughlin, and he's still battling along there. Like, it's with a new manager in, it'll definitely give them a bit of hope in the division.
It definitely will. And look, they had four marks, and I was asking one of the players, were they doing much work on the marks, and they've picked their team with Lillis in full forward, you know, to maybe get the best out of that. And four marks is a big return, considering in the Donegal Mayo game there's only one mark in the whole game. Am I right in saying that? The Murphy one, the poxy one. So, like, I mean, four marks is a good one in your first game, and they seem to be basing it around. Carr Healy came on as a sub in the second half, his first game with Leash since 2013. Carr Healy is a legend in Leash football. Leash supporters love him, Portlaoise supporters love him. He's a warrior, and he went with the Hurlers, and I'm not sure why he's not back with the Hurlers this year again, but he's back in with the Footballers. He's 32, 33 now, has had some unbelievably bad injuries, so it's just fantastic to see Catter back, and hopefully he hasn't lost, you know, his pace and his ability. I mean, he won't have lost his heart anyway. So it's fantastic for Leash fans to see him back on the field. Jeez, it's more positive around Leash football now. Last week I had them relegated.
Yeah, it's a shame Emlyn missed the two goals. He left early.
I'll never forget. I went over when Roy Keane took over Sunderland. I went over. Obviously, love Roy Keane, so I went over to support Sunderland. And they were playing, I think it was Derby or someone, and it was the worst shite I'd seen in a long time. And they were a goal down, and we're walking across the car park leaving after 85 minutes, and this huge cheer. Kenwyn Jones is after sticking in a header. These things happen. So Kildare beat Fermanagh. Fermanagh apparently were well set up defensively, so look, we're not going to see maybe too much difference from Fermanagh. But Kieran Corrigan, I hope we see this tonight on TG Cahirc. From reading reports, he broke clear of Liam Healy, rounded Kildare keeper Mark Donnellan, but his shot could only rebound off the crossbar. And I just have Ronnie Rosenthal versus Aston Villa in my head. I want to see this. So he's gone around the goalkeeper with an open goal and he hit the crossbar. Kieran Corrigan.
God love, he's not looking forward to seeing this tonight. Like, the whole country's tuning in this.
Yeah, so tune in to see this miss. Now, maybe it could be wrong. Maybe he went around him and it's a tight angle and he tried to whack it back. I'm hoping from his point of view that's it and it's not Ronnie Rosenthal from the penalty spot onto the crossbar challenge.
It says the goal was gaping though. It sounds like it was there. Yeah,
okay. All right, Armagh Hammer Cavan, we mentioned that, lad. So, like, I mean, Mickey Graham had to offer a public apology to the people of Cavan. He says, "We owe the good people of Cavan who paid good money to come and see us an apology. This was nowhere near good enough," and that's nowhere near good enough to be getting hammered by that. We know how many players that they're down. Oisin O'Neill said after the game, he started, I don't think he had been picked to start. He started for Armagh. He said, "We worked really hard in pre-season. We're looking forward to this first game. We targeted this one from a long way out." So it's interesting when you hear that targeted this. They obviously lost to Armagh in the championship. So natural enough, say, lads, we'll get these lads back. I was wondering with the league, when you target one for one way out, then your next game you have six days. Do you know what I mean? Is there, like, that's Leash. So I'm delighted with this. So they haven't targeted Leash at all. So Leash have a great record against Armagh. So no, but I thought that was an interesting one. And he was talking about having three home games. They only had two home games last year. They obviously, one was taken off them. So, like, I mean, Armagh, by the sounds of things, targeting a league. And Jesus, like, they definitely have a fair forward line. And their subs that came on, Michael Shields came on, Gerald O'Burns came on, James Morgan came on, and Jamar Hall came on. Bit of strength in depth there as well.
Yeah, listen, it's good. I suppose with Kieran McGeaney there now, he's had a nice number of years, or you imagine they're going to click eventually, like, you know. But a number of years ago, I would have known very little Armagh players, whereas now the kind of names are becoming more, I suppose, cemented in fame, like the likes of O'Neill's, the Jamar Hall, them sort of names. So I suppose it was the right time to get Cavan as well, but I suppose you can't read into the first game too much. But yeah, you'd be worried if you were just targeting that one game for the last 3-4 months, that I suppose that you're forgetting about everyone else in the division. But I'm sure Kieran McGeaney, he's a shrewd enough operator that he'll have his work done, he'll have his homework done in the rest of the games coming.
It's funny that young Turbot, as if the one place that don't need new good young players coming through is in the forwards. Like, yeah. I mean, a good wing back or a good centre, a dynamic centre back, you know, a Jack McCaffrey type young player is what they mean. Do you see Stephen Campbell when he got the penalty? Like, they were winning well at this stage. He had to have a bit of afters with Raymond Gallagher. Did you notice that? Yeah. He ran in after him, whatever was going on between the two of them.
He flicked that switch, he went to animal mode. are we going to allow yourselves to get excited by Armagh again this year for what will be the third?
I can't help it. It's just a lovely I like them. And I'm waiting to hear me about Galway in part two. And that's just off highlights. All right, Division 3 then. So Cork were kind of, you know, they're the favourites. And I thought it was an interesting stat. There was a first win in Páirc Uí Chaoimh for 5.5 years. Isn't that unbelievable from Cork? It's only about 2,500 at this game. No interest in it. It was a first opening round league win since 2016 and a first win in the competition since February 2018. They've been in disarray. So Ronan McCarthy said after the game, "We've never had Páirc Uí Chaoimh as a base." Played in Páirc Uí Rinn and stuff like that, didn't they? Yeah. Their games. "We don't want to overplay this, but there will be a slight benefit as the year goes on. We'll have four games here in the league. It's a place we can start calling home. Our home record has been appalling. We only got 2 points from 14 in the last 2 years." So Kieran Sheehan is back. He scored two nice first half points. So they look like they're in, you know, in good shape. Even though there was times in that game, from all accounts, that they weren't great. But they still won by 7 points, and that's what you'd expect.
Yeah, it's hard to know where Offaly are at too. I suppose they got to the Burn Cup final.
Offaly are going well at this time of the year. Yeah,
you know, a seven point win might be bigger and a better performance than maybe you're looking at. You know, yeah. So it'll tell more in the league going on. But Offaly are definitely improved in the last 12 months dramatically since John Mahon has come in. In fairness,
yeah. So that's it. Tipperary and Down obviously drew. That looked like a little bit of a boring enough there. It looks like Tipperary and Cork are moving into pole position, since Derry, who we thought might have an outside chance, couldn't beat Leitrim at home. And it, you know, isn't it terrible that we
see? That's very disrespectful. No, I
wanted to ask you about that, Emlyn, because usually when people are going, you know, the weaker counties, the Carlows and the Leitrims.
No disrespect to Leitrim.
No disrespect. Are you sick of hearing that?
It's funny, and you'd done a show here a few weeks ago, and Ger Brennan was like, "And the likes of Leitrim aren't going all there." And I said, "Why do you have to keep referring to Leitrim? Like, we're Division 3 now, so we shouldn't be used in that context anymore." But
they're on the tip of everyone's tongue when you're thinking of a poor Leitrim, aren't they? Well, you've the smallest playing population, right? Isn't that our playing population?
No, I don't know what it is, but it shouldn't be referred to anyway. So we're Division 3 now. It should be Division 4 teams referred to only, and we're out of that division. We thought that, like, when Carlow got out of Division 4, it was like there were Carlow Rise and Carlow.
Yeah.
Like Leitrim were there now, and we're drawn with Derry, and we're still being referred to Leitrim aren't going to win all Ireland. So we're trying to change that perception, Willie, you know. So
yeah, and it's funny actually, because Keith Burney, he scored 9 points, 8 from taking over your job on the freeze, has he?
No, I wasn't kicking him for last year either. But no, Keith was with us the year before. He was away last year. In fairness to him, he's very good at kicking it off the ground.
Right.
He was a good soccer player too. He played a bit with Longford Town underage and that. So he's been a big addition back in. So, like, it's, you know yourself, if you have a good free kick taker, at least it always gives you a chance if you are getting frees. So I suppose going into the game, Leitrim people wouldn't have given them any hope. I probably didn't give them much of a
hope. Nobody did, because Celtic Park is a different... traditionally, it's not easy to play up there. Derry will be set up in a way that I didn't give Leitrim any chance in this game, let's be honest.
And with Rory Gallagher there,
a new manager.
I presume that they'll concede about 7 or 8 points and we'd be lucky to get, you know. So I suppose the fact that we were 2 points up going into injury time, we're probably disappointed if we didn't take the 2 points, especially if we need every point we can get into the division. But before the hand, we would have took our hands off if someone told you we'd get a point in it. So hats off to the lads. There is a good group of players there, in fairness, and I suppose the fact when you're being wrote off so much, it's very easy to get yourself up for them sort of games. But again, a lot of it has to be said, what sort of shape are they in? Nobody really knows either, you know. So we've Cork now at home this weekend, which will prove a massive task, and it'll probably give us a bit of a better, I suppose, whereabouts where we're at as
where
a team.
Where you're at. Well, you know, here's our Derry correspondent, so he will find out what is wrong with Derry. In fairness, like, I mean, we were talking up Derry last Thursday, and again, no disrespect to Leitrim. Leitrim were one of the favourites to go down. Like, they were, let's be honest, in the bookies. At home games, you have to win them regardless of who it is, you know?
Yeah, and it is. I don't want to hear like people talking about Derry coming out of Division 4, because Derry should never have been in Division 4. Like, there was a reason that was a big scandal when they went down. Like, you know, everybody in Derry was pissed off to find themselves so low. So they're back sort of where they should be, and they should be sort of aiming for the top of Division 3, Division 2. But no, it's not a good start. By all accounts, I think they started brightly but missed a lot of chances and found themselves, was it 1-3 to nothing down or something like that, you know, right. Even though they sort of started on the front foot. They went with the wind. I think Leitrim picked to go against the wind in the first half and targeted that, and then they went ahead in the second half, and Derry had to come from behind in the end. But just, yeah, it's uninspiring, really. Shane McGuigan came on and scored 1-1, so he'd obviously be starting most of their games. He'd be starting next.
Here's a stat which I couldn't believe. So only 7 players remained on the Leitrim from the Leitrim team that lost to Derry last year in the league final, and only 6 of that victory were available on the Derry team. So that's some turnover in 1 year from 2 teams. Obviously, it must have been going well if they played each other in the Division 4 league final, got promoted, and you're looking at 7 left from Leitrim and 6 left from Derry.
Yeah, you'd imagine it'd be the other way, wouldn't you? You'd imagine, especially
yeah,
with the
Yeah, they'd be building on maybe 12 of that continue on, you know?
Yeah, I suppose there's different aspects and different reasons for lads retiring and that sort of thing too, but it's definitely a big turnaround. I know for ourselves, and like, we don't have, as you said, we don't have a massive pick of players, so like, I suppose it makes the point all that more valuable when you see that change of players and that. But I suppose for Derry, one thing we would have noticed last year was when they were attacking, they were very strong going forward, like, you know, and that's what I would have thought, especially at home in this game. But I suppose when you see the amount of changes they have to their squad, maybe Derry aren't as strong as we're all kind of led to believe.
And Rory Gallagher doesn't like those attacking players. What do you want to be going on with those type of players for? Anyways, I have to ask you, like, I mean, are you looking at those games? You want to get back in with Leitrim. So you did. I'm not going to judge you at all last year. You were very disappointed after the Roscommon game and you dropped off the panel. Done it loads of times, so many times I can't even remember how many times I've done it. So I'm not going to in any way judge you on the disappointment of not getting the game time that you wanted. What I am surprised about is wanting to go back in when Terry Hyland is obviously pissed off with you. You know, when you jump ship, the only way generally I got back in was when the manager went. Do you know what I mean?
So I think that's going to be my case. <as well. laughs>
You want to be hoping Terry's gone. Like, so like, I mean, in your own competitive way, would you be like going, it would suit my chances of getting back in there if Leitrim didn't draw with Derry?
No, not really. I'll be honest, last year I left on different bases, and it probably wasn't over game time. It was probably the relationship myself and Terry had.
Oh, was it?
Towards each other. I felt Terry didn't value me as a footballer, and in return then I suppose we lost a lot of respect for each other through different things. And
well, then you've no chance of getting back in.
That's 100%. And I probably would have pulled plug earlier the way things were going and the way I kind of felt involved in the team. Had, I suppose, only then my wife and my family kind of told me to stick at it, and I wasn't enjoying it at all, you know.
But
so
you started the league finally. You'd gotten back in then. I'll
go back to that point too. I do relatively believe that he didn't want to play me in the league final, but the whole kind of media behind Emily Mulligan not playing in Croke Park nearly put pressure on him to play me. And even that day, whenever I seen a ball going up on the sideline, I was just waiting to be whipped off.
Like, really?
That's the way I was playing. I didn't even enjoy playing in it, because I was just, and the first few minutes in the second half, he took me straight off.
Yeah,
you know? So I suppose, listen,
why do you think that was?
Maybe there's a personality clash between the two.
Was that immediate?
I felt it. I probably came from initially when I done the draw for RTE. I heard a few things back that when we got drawn against Roscommon, I was doing the live RT draw and the camera came with me, and I said, well, I was just being realistic, I kind of said this, I said it was deflated after the draw, that we've no chance of winning Connacht after that draw. And then it got back to me then that he had said to a few players on the QT, don't pass any heed to Mulligan, what he's saying about us and all. Listen, you know, I would have rather he come and said that to me if he had an issue with what I had said. And I suppose that filtered on throughout the year, and like, we never really talked or communicated, and it was just kind of, I suppose for the two of us, it just didn't really work out, you know. And
right.
Listen, he could go into a greater detail, but as I said, I don't hold any grudge and I respect his decision, but at the same time I couldn't play under him again, and vice versa. He obviously didn't want me involved. Like, I want to play for Leitrim obviously, but if it's a case that he doesn't want me involved, that's his decision, you know, and I respect that fully as well. So so while he's there, realistically the chance of me going back to him for Leitrim are very slim.
So you're 31 or 32? Yeah, 32 this year.
I'm going 32 this year. Yeah,
you're going 32 this year. So look, you have time.
Listen, I'm not dwelling on it, Willie, to be honest. It is what it is. I've been lucky enough to play. I've gone through tough enough injuries to get back playing. It's disappointing the way it's ended, you know. I suppose if this is the end, I suppose the biggest thing I would have liked was maybe to sit down to Terry at the start of the year and said, listen, as I suppose there's two men to sit down and iron it out, any issues that we did have, and even for him to say to me, listen, I'd want you back, at least tell me to my face about it, you know.
That's the thing, and I've had loads of managers where there's been tension and where you're not acting like grown adults, and for some reason, for me, that's the manager's job to stop that, right? That's your job to stop that. And I often felt a lot of managers that could walk past you, ignore you, and I'm ignoring him back. I'm acting petulant. But I'm petulant. I'm in my 20s. Like, this is a grown man whose job is to manage players. It's on them to call you in. And now maybe they don't want to call you in. Maybe they want to push you that far that they push you out the door and you quit.
Yeah.
So you don't know what they want. But I always think it's not mature to deal with a player that way, where you're ignoring each other. It's not healthy for anyone. It's not healthy for a squad. And honestly, it's happened so many times to me that the relationship is broken down and there's no... Why can't that be fixed? I don't hold grudges. I'd move on straight away, but I won't move on if you're just ignoring me. I'll make your life hard, you know, and make everyone else's life hard. It's immature.
That's where our relationship was. It was probably immature, as you said. There was no chat or conversation between us. There was more like sly remarks and sly digs, and it was just a lack of respect between, well, from one to the other. And then I suppose it eventually came to me not respecting him. And then it's the same as a place of work. If you don't respect your boss, and it's very hard to go into an environment that you don't want to be involved in, if you're just kind of getting negativity consistently, you know. So I probably lasted longer last year than I probably would have had or could have expected, because I think I probably should have went away a wee bit. I should have probably walked away a bit earlier from it, the way my own mental state was at the time. It just wasn't healthy for me, and it was affecting everyone else around me. So listen, there is a time in life you just have to make a decision, and that was my decision. It wasn't just turning me back on Leitrim, it was just that it just wasn't working out for any of us involved. So he did say after the door would be open for me to come back, but we haven't spoke since that Roscommon game, so it's very hard. I says, I think that door is double locked at this stage.
So how does the door open? Like, I mean, who makes this call?
But listen, we'll move on from it anyway. I'm not going to dwell on it anyway, you know.
No, that's it. And you're not retired. Like, I never retired as well. I'm still available for selection whenever any manager wants to come in. Yeah, I've been overlooked by the last few, which I'm disappointed about. If I'm being honest,
I have actually announced my retirement.
Have you?
So yeah, I don't from Derry, like, country retirement.
Did you release a statement?
Yeah, not that anybody cared. Or
okay, we'll finish off on a Joe Brolly anecdote. So he was on air the other day, and this is a great one, whether you believe it or not. It was in his piece in The Independent. I didn't see the air broadcast, so he's talking about Rory Kavanagh, and he was a bit taken aback by how small Rory was. And Rory says to him, I'm back to my normal weight, 12 and a half stone, not much more than what I am. He said, when Jim McGuinness took over in 2011, he put Rory on a weight gain regime. We all kind of know that happened. He said he fed him like a foie gras goose. And this is a quote from Rory Kavanagh to Joe Brolly. I was drinking 3 protein shakes a day and 2 tubs of ice cream. Jimmy would ring me every night after training to make sure I'd finish my ice cream. Fantastic. Is it true? You decide. That's kind of the way we look at it. So Rory went from 12 and a half stone to 14 and a half stone in just 5 months, eating ice cream and protein shakes. So, like, I mean, and obviously hopping off the gym as well, because muscle weighs more. And I presume you're eating the ice cream to pile on the calories and turn that into whatever. I don't know. I'm not a S&C man, but that's a huge increase. And now he's back down to 12 and a half stone. So that's it. So Jim McGuinness ringing up to see, did you eat your ice cream? There's a first time when you hear stories like that. First time for everything. Right, we'll come back and in part two.
I said, are you going to get up or are you going to stay in bed? I said, we have a game there about 3:30. If you wouldn't mind joining us. Didn't even stir, like, didn't even go for the bag. Took his lie in, took his extra 5 minutes. It was like the snooze button. Hit the snooze button for another 5 minutes. Rolled out of bed. 1-7 that day.
All right, so Dublin Kerry, lads, we're not going to spend too much time on this because it is the league and we have to put it into the context. Dublin are only back training 2 weeks, and do you know, like, I mean, you'd nearly look at Kerry a little bit more in that Peter Kane said after the game, he says, we're happy enough. They showed great resilience and great determination to go and be brave and go after it. We're relatively happy. Like, they led by 3 points in the 66th minute. They couldn't close it out again against Dublin. Dublin squeezed them and they panicked a little bit, especially Ryan from the kickouts. Will they be happy? You know, I suppose they did pull it out with the Clifford free, which maybe changed the psychology of it, but like, again, they're in a winning position against Dublin and didn't close it out in Croke Park.
Yeah, there's the fact that you said Dublin running back training, but then there's been a lot of fact they see, or a lot of people on Twitter saying that Kerry running back a number of weeks training, and then I don't know.
Yeah, no, they were on a holiday too. Like, I mean, they're not back that long as well, but Dublin have a new manager and have done nothing.
Yeah.
Kerry had the same manager last year.
And a lot of that team did start all out.
Did a stronger
well.
Team out, yeah.
Yeah, like before the game, I would have been expecting Kerry to win it. I suppose not even comfortably, but within a few points to spare. And that, as you said, at that stage of the game, winning by the 2 or 3 points, I thought they would have kicked on home. But as you said, they just couldn't finish it out, you know. And I suppose maybe it is a thing in the back of their minds against the Dublin. And then again, you have to hats off to Dublin. Like, they just don't finish it. Like, they just keep going to the end. And I suppose their game management, and you know, they never panic, like when they come under pressure. Like, it's admirable, in fairness. Like, yeah. Like Kieran Kilkenny for the last 15 minutes, he made some massive plays in that game, like, you know, when you needed someone to step up, like, you know. And I suppose they're able to count on that sort of quality player. Like,
he was exceptional. He was, and he had a very quiet first half. He wasn't at the races at all. Like, I mean, but I'd love to see his times and training. Like, he's just, sometimes he looks wrecked and then he's just still always on the go. He must be unbelievably fit to keep it going. Positives for Kerry: James O'Donoghue roasted Merchant. You don't often see Merchant's marked some good players. He's marked Sludden out of it, he marked Stephen O'Brien out of it. He didn't mark James O'Donoghue out of it, he got roasted. Now, I don't think Merchant is as good. I've said this last year, Merchant man marking someone in the half forward line, he's much better than man marking someone in the full back line. And we explained the dynamics of that before, in that half forwards look for a handy little ball and being free, Merchant won't give them that ball, it's harder to get into the game. Whereas if he's marking them in the full back line, they'll still give it. Do you know what I mean? Because for some reason you'll accept passing to a man on the full forward line under pressure, but you won't give the same ball to a half forward. So he does do better. He does do better in the half back line, man marking someone. But James O'Donoghue back at full throttle, Conan, was a nice thing to see in the first half.
Yeah, he looked a level above Merchant, to be really honest. Like, he just looked like he was on a different plane. But it was for 40-45 minutes and then he sort of burned out a bit. Maybe that's to be expected, like, but he did look very exciting. I'm sort of trying to not get too excited by him because he's let us down before, or he'll get injured again. But if they can have that James O'Donoghue in the summer, then it's going to be great, because he was making right decisions as well. Like, he scored 3 points, yes, but he was going at players, he was popping it off, and he was direct. He wasn't coming outside the 45 and popping it off.
He's a confidence player, and he looked, you know, he was doing the right thing.
Not sure
Geaney suited to coming so deep. I don't think he's that type of player. Sean O'Shea, madness playing him midfield. Why would they not just have played the wing forward? Gavin O'Brien, big tall rangy fellow. Why is Sean O'Shea marking Fenton? Like, what are you trying to do to Sean O'Shea?
Yeah, it was, and I suppose it showed in the first half with Fenton. You know, he kicked some 3 or 4 brilliant points. He was superb in the first half, but I suppose it was very hard for Sean O'Shea to be marking him, like, someone that's not used to, first and foremost, following someone consistently back. And like Fenton, who's been there now for the last number of years, and I suppose who dominates the best midfielders in the country, never mind, I suppose, throwing Sean O'Shea in on top of him, who took a bad rap to the head after 10 seconds of the game as well, so it wouldn't have helped.
And Sean O'Shea, we know one of his weaknesses is his pace. And what's one of Fenton's strengths? Sean O'Shea cannot mark. He can't mark him in the air and he can't mark him on the ground. What kind of a matchup was that?
Yeah. He's also, like, I know he works hard, but he's a classy centre forward. You know, he just doesn't need to be marking the best midfielder in Ireland. It's a very strange matchup.
His free taking was outstanding. What about David Clifford's goal, lads? So, what was beautiful about this goal, and it was a similar move that he sewed up Johnny Cooper, he turned before he caught the ball. So he's running out to the ball at full pace, and the ball is coming at an angle that's coming on his side that he's protecting. So he's actually turned his body and sidestepped backwards before the ball lands in his hands. So, like, I mean, the defender there is thinking, right, he's going to catch this. A couple more steps then is going to bring him out a little bit further, and I'll get hands on him then. Instead, Clifford has turned before the ball has actually caught. And like, I mean, this isn't a unique move to David Clifford. It works like a charm if the ball is coming at the right angle, I suppose, Emlyn.
Yeah, he'd 5 yards gain going towards the opposition goal before he even got the ball. I suppose he made the run out and yet he turned and got the ball at the same time. But I suppose the size of him, it must be impossible to mark him. Like, you know, the strides on him, the big solo, like even the solo he took before he shot the goal, he nearly kicked it about 6 foot, 7 foot up into the air and still caught it and turned. But the pace he can do all that at is frightening. I think it's, you know, it's all in such a flow, as he says, at full intensity, to be able to beat the man, to take the solo, take a bad solo and still keep it in control, and then again to finish low and hard into the bottom corner. Everything you tell as far as any young fella going up.
And is it fair to say Davy Byrne did all right on him? Like, did well on him. Yeah. I'd say Clifford's possessions weren't that high.
Yeah, he got a great block in initially, I think, wasn't it? The very start, Clifford turned on the left and Byrne, you know, and there, I suppose, there are psychological battles for a defender. But you know yourself, going into mark him, he's going to kick a few points anyway. I think it's a given anyway. Yeah. So it's just, I suppose, restrict him to as little as possible. But he's definitely, like, the quality of that goal was phenomenal, in fairness.
Yeah, no, it definitely was.
He never decides anything beforehand. Like, he waits till the very, very last split second to decide what he's doing. And, like, even it shrugged off Davy Byrne. And then Davy Byrne committed, because most players then, when they got that space, they'll clip it over. So Davy Byrne dived to block. And Clifford just keeps going on inside. Yeah. Like, you know, he waits till the very last moment.
Yeah. Philly McMahon did well on Walsh. I've got an issue with Tommy Walsh. And he's there as a big man. He breaks out for the ball way too often. Like, why does Tommy Walsh not just stand there? Could you imagine, how many times has there a ball gone into him and he's gone in under it? Do you know what I mean? Why not just stand on the edge of the square? You don't need to break out in front. If you're there as an option for a mark, stand on the edge of the square. Yeah. You only break out the odd time. Now, I know he's well able to win ball out in front and he can do different things. But if you want a nice balance of what's in there, Clifford can do that. You stay on the edge of the square and give us an extra option. Do you know, if that initial ball with Clifford or O'Donoghue isn't on, or they've broken out and they've come out too far, now I have a chance at dropping it onto the edge of the square to you. If you're running towards me, that pass is harder for me to hit you with. If you're standing static on the edge of the square, any forward, you know, worth his salt can hit the edge of the square with a pass. And you don't need to run, because you're way taller than Philly McMahon. You're twice his size. Yeah. I don't get that. It's like there's no work being done on him in there. Or he's not being coached into being, I don't know, you know, a target in there.
Yeah, and like Fenton actually mentioned him afterwards. He said they thought that Kerry would put a bit more ball into him, like, and try to use the mark, especially with the mark, you know, they haven't tried to do. Like that, remember that catch he got in the All-Ireland final that, and then popped it off to Sean O'Shea, who had a goal chance, but he put it over. Like, that's what he should be used for, is it? Like, they've got enough forwards, you're right, and he's an extra dimension.
He's an extra thing that Dublin would be like, shit. Yeah. Now there could be a long ball option. He seems to make runs Clifford makes.
And he's taking, and with that, then he's taking up the space for them lads.
Yeah.
Like, if you have two corner forwards, there's nothing worse than three men running for the ball and
getting
you're like,
in the way.
Tommy, get
so
back in.
So
within,
then,
you know,
so then when it goes, Tommy runs under it, there's nobody behind him.
Yeah.
And he's bringing out another man. Like, if Clifford wins it and Tommy's coming out, it's bringing more.
Another
defender out to double up there. But as you said, it's probably frustrating in there if the ball isn't going in the top of him. Then maybe, or as you said, maybe they're not doing
well.
Anything. Like, he's probably trying to make a name for himself, wants to get in the team. I suppose he's not happy just to stand on the square and hope two balls come into him in the whole half. He's probably trying to say, let me out at the ball, show Peter Kane that I can.
But I was Peter Kane, I'd say to him, Tommy, I won't think you're playing bad.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, 100%.
You're there as an extra string to our bow and to confuse Dublin, and we'll try and get three into you. We need you to win them, but I want you standing on the edge of the square. I want you winning them there.
Yeah.
So the layoff is on, or else a mark. You've three offensive marks. You will catch them. It's up to the lads to stick them into your hands.
Yeah, because he's getting a lot of ball around 45 and he's popping it off. And you're like, what? Tommy Walsh doesn't need to be doing that to anybody.
Joe, he looks clumbersome when he's out around them, doesn't he? That's not him. At his age now, what his game is.
And in the second half, he comes on to his left, on the left-hand side, puts it wide. And you're like, oh, like, again, Tommy Walsh doesn't need to be doing that. Like, somebody else can do this stuff.
Yeah, yeah. In fairness, Kerry are very lightweight around midfield, aren't they? When for all the strength and depth they have now, they are missing David Moore and Jack Barry and Dermot O'Connor, who could all play there. But like, I mean, they're down to the bare bones, aren't they, in midfield? And that's where they were destroyed really for a lot of the game. Well, Fenton ran amok. We'll talk about him in performance the weekend. But they were destroyed there in the first half.
And in fairness to Evan Comerford, you have to hand it to his kickouts were, you know, I suppose he will be a very good man to step into Cluxton's shoes. You know, you can see definitely he's the very similarities in terms of striking of the ball and. You know, it does make a massive difference. But yeah, definitely when you take David Moore, especially out of that midfield there, and Kerry, like, they're struggling big time there, yeah, for someone just to dominate. I suppose, again, if you're going to push for all Ireland's, like, you know, you need someone with a bigger, stronger presence there, definitely, than, I suppose, God forbid, if David Moore or someone got injured. Do you know, like, they've nothing really else to step in there, like, you know. So yeah, it's definitely, well, I don't think Sean O'Shea is their answer to it either, but whether that was in his mind to try him out there, I don't know, but it definitely didn't work.
And, like, I mean, it just shows the importance of Jack Barry, who man marks Fenton. Look what Fenton can do when he's not being looked after by Barry, and Barry's a good physical match for him. I thought Aaron Byrne looked very good, lads. A player I'm not massively familiar with outside of a few Na Fianna games, which is, well, I thought for a player, well, not sure if that was his debut or not, but he scored an unbelievable point. But what he did for the Kilkenny free at the end was even more impressive. Like, that was, showed a lot of experience. Burned his man down the wing, but waited for the support run. Who's there in the last couple of minutes? Only Kilkenny with his engine. Bang, pop pass. And I thought initially it was a very soft free. I thought Kilkenny, because he didn't fall straight away, but he lost balance. But Enright came in. It was a bit like Ryan McHugh's tackle when he got the black card on Peter Hart. He tackled with his hand, but he also stuck his foot in. And he did. Yeah. He kind of tripped. Even if he didn't trip him that much, he knocked Kilkenny off stride enough for him to probably fall over.
It was a foul. Like,
it was a foul,
Kilkenny held onto the ball as well on the ground. Like, you know, it wasn't like he'd lost possession. He still had the ball.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, you're right. Like, Byrne, for such a young player, like, normally young players would be erratic and they'd shoot, or
you'd panic there.
They don't want to have the ball too long because they feel like they shouldn't have it too long.
Yeah.
But he just, as you say, held on to it until the right decision became available. It was actually very impressive.
I thought that was very impressive play by him. I really did. Did we mention Kilkenny's tactical foul on Burns? So Kilkenny's such a smart player, and he's a cynical player as well, let's be honest. He fouled Burns. It was 45 metres out.
Just outside, about another metre.
Another couple of metres. Yeah. 46, 47. And Scully the Egypt goes and kicks the ball away. So instead of Kilkenny, and I don't doubt for a second that what's going through Kilkenny's mind is Clifford's on the freeze. It's probably out of his range. A lot of pressure on him. I'm going to foul him. Definitely foul him. It was lazy. He didn't try to do anything other than foul him. But Kilkenny would have processed that in his head. Because, like, he'll be probably a great analyst or manager when he's finished, because he's a great football brain, and he would have been thinking of that. And Scully kicks it away to move it in. I'd say Kilkenny was livid with him, because that made Kilkenny look bad. It made Kilkenny look like an idiot when Kilkenny was actually being smashed.
And that's exactly what Declan Bonner wanted Donegal to do, only this was for a point, and he knew where to find him to stop the point. Everybody gets back, Kerry have to pass it, but we're all behind the ball.
Yeah, fantastic. So we'll move on to Galway Monaghan, lads, because again, this is off the highlights last night, and I was very disappointed in TG Cahir to show two hurling yesterday and to not show Galway Monaghan. Two new managers that are more footballing managers than had been beforehand, with Banty and Pádraic Joyce. Two big teams in Division 1, and they show two hurling games on a Sunday. It's outrageous. It's not fair on football fans, because like, you can talk all you want during May when the Munster League is on, and we have to suck it up and go, well, the Munster League, Munster Championship is probably better than an opening round match in Leinster or any of the provinces, and we suck up two hurling games on a Sunday. But it's not right during the National League in the first round for them not to give us a hurling or a football option. Pádraic Joyce said after the game, a lovely quote by Pádraic Joyce: to win things you have to play football, and we're trying to play football. By God, I know it was only the highlights, you didn't see it all, but playing football, they are. Long kick passes, someone breaking out around the 45. Instead of when they get it on the 45, they're not passing it backwards, immediately turning around and giving it into the two-man full forward. Good, fast, early ball, fast forwards who can score.
Yeah, and I suppose the thing Galway have is footballers. Like, they have players that are capable of doing it. Do you know, it's like, and even to see Comer coming back in there, and like the corner forward, young Finnerty lad, like, they have dangerous forwards if they can get the ball in there. Yeah. Like, I seen them last year against Sligo in the Connacht Championship, like, and they looked so lethargic. There was no inventiveness in them at all to go forward with it. Like, it was painful to watch Danny Cummins and Burke inside, because there was no ball coming into them. Whereas the difference now for forwards, knowing that no matter what, that the ball is coming, you know, at 45-50
early ball.
Yeah. And as you said, like, what a manager to have to even demonstrate the kick pass for them. Like, you know, one of the best left pegs ever played. So, like, them little things are massive, and I suppose it's great for Galway football if Pádraic Joyce there for them to I suppose, to teach them that element of it, but it'll definitely change their whole dimension of play in terms of what Kevin Walsh, the style he'd been playing anyway.
It will, and it's great to see. And I think Comer finished up in the full forward line, but he was out around the half forward line when he came. And I love that too. It's a change. He's a wrecking ball running at teams. And Shane Walsh in there has got more pace and will probably show a little bit better than Comer did. And Comer's probably out of the game a little bit too much in there, where he can be in the game influencing it a bit more out in the half forward line.
Yeah, and Comer's pinging some lovely passes in there. And actually, and it's so basic, but every time a pass went forward for Galway, there was 3-4 like maroon jerseys coming off them, and yeah, it looks so exciting. There's so many options. It gets everybody's tails up, you know. And like, maybe that's going to be good for Comer if he's coming late onto a ball. I couldn't imagine anybody better bursting through off Shane Walsh and Damien Comer.
It's fantastic stuff. And look, Conor Boyle off the highlight scored one of the easiest points for Roscommon. Galway were wide open, but that's the risk you take. So look, they conceded 16 points, which would probably give Kevin Walsh nightmares, but they scored 114 and won the game.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And by all accounts, we're the better team. But Conor Boyle just got a ball around midfield and they're the man over because they're going mad for man. He just sold it up and tapped it over the back. You know, that's the price you pay sometimes. You can't be good at everything, you know? And if you want to be, like we talk about Guardiola and Klopp, their attacking philosophies, that's what they want to do. Go and dictate the game, take it to your opponents and score. Like, you might not be, although Liverpool have the bloody balance fairly well. I don't want to
don't worry about it.
It's heartbreaking.
When you have players of Shane Walsh quality and Comer and Conroy, these lads, they want to play football. Yeah. As you said, they're not going out there to defend. Like, you know, and as you said, if his philosophy is, well, we're going to concede, but we're going to outscore the team. Like, which is better, like a 12-9 win or a 10-9 win, or as you said, concede 16 but still win the game.
I
think all the fans that take the latter there, like, and rather see, I says, their team fulfilling their full potential with players to come back in there too from Cara Finn as well. You know?
How highly rated is Robert Finnerty? His goal was beautiful. So he showed it onto the wide part of the goal with his left and then turns back and taps it in on the right. Beautiful stuff. Like,
I've seen highlights of him for the, I think he's in NUIG, to play whatever, say, one of the games in Sigerson. I've seen highlights. He kicked 1-4, 1-5 in it. Now, that was the first time I've seen him this year now. And in fairness, he looked very impressive now, as a sole kind of man in there. So, sure, you'd imagine along the likes of the older lads was watching him, it'll only bring him on further. Yeah. But he definitely could have make a big impact for them this year.
Yeah, definitely could. All right, we'll come back with performance of the weekend.
He gave me back then was, we were in the Glen Royal on a night out, and I'd never met him before, and he put his arm around me and he said, "You won't go too far wrong if you win the ball and give it to me." I said, "All right, well, okay."
That's great advice.
Yeah, it was. For you.
All right, performance of the weekend. We won't spend too long here, lads, because we've gone way over time. Brian Fenton, lads, in the first half was just like a Rolls-Royce footballer. I liked his interview with Ayr as well. I think they gave him man of the match. Or did someone give Kieran?
Yeah, Ayr
gave RTE him gave Kieran Kilkenny man of the match. Ayr gave Fenton man of the match. He said, "I wasn't too active in the second half there, but it was very nice to get the award and thanks very much." He did kind of go out of it in the second half, but like, he was all over the place. And he was asked about his scoring, and he said, He said in the interview, "It's something you're always practicing since you're a kid, clipping scores." And I loved how he described clipping scores, because that's how Fenton scores. He clips them. And I was just thinking that when I was playing, I was a very accurate clipping scores, but kicking scores, I was dreadful. When you're on the run and you don't have to kick it hard, just your momentum and your speed clips the outside of the ball, you put a bit of right to left curl on it and you're clipping the ball over the bar. I just love it. And that's how Fenton does it all the time. He's usually running at speed. From a standing position, you wouldn't know what Fenton might be like. He's not clipping them.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Kicking them and clipping them are two totally different things. Emlyn,
completely. Yeah, and it's even I used to kicking a free kick. You know, obviously you're kicking a free kick. You're taking a few steps back. I remember when I used to hit a bit of bad form, I used to end up start clipping the free kick. So
you'd
used
run
to go
really
back,
fast.
I used to go back. I used to take about 10 to 15 back and run hard up to the mark. And then, as you said, you're just, all you're looking for is the direction, because you're going so hard at the ball that it used to just go over. Do you know? But it is true. Like, it's so much. Sometimes when you practice it a lot, it's a lot easier, just as you said, to get the distance. But the way he kicks it, he just, as you said, he just clips it. He doesn't put any power into it. It's just the leg just comes back at a little stroke, side foot. shot, and his accuracy is phenomenal as well for a midfielder. Like, it's just he just doesn't miss, really, does he? Like, it's that easy, he kicks them over. And I suppose the big thing is he kicks them from the right place. Like, you never see him kick from an angle, you never see him kick from 45. He's always in there and come through that middle D.
Yeah.
Do you know, it's coming in on the left or coming in on the right, you know, and it's brilliant to watch.
And that's where he practiced from. Conor Mortimer used to call them spinners. So I don't know what spinners are, probably.
Outside the left
are the spinners, are they? Did you see Kieran MacDonald on the sideline? He's on the sunbeds, lads, is he? Or else he's just back from
he's in good shape.
He looks in good shape for himself. And James Horan celebrated a draw. It was nice to see the two of them embracing after that. Darren McCurry, lad, scored 1-6. The goal he scored was a sensational ball by Ronan O'Neill. Knew McCurry was gone behind him, but couldn't get it to him in time for the hand pass, and just waited a little bit more and just kicked it over his shoulder with his left foot. So that was a beautiful finish. But McCurry's, I don't know what the story with McCurry is. He's clearly a very good player.
Yeah.
But he just can't make that step up in Championship to be dominating a game like that.
Yeah, we've been here before, I think.
Yeah,
like,
we have.
You're getting excited. Like, Jesus, Tyrone have McCurry and O'Neill. And it's like, they just don't.
And O'Neill, unfortunately, hasn't kind of made that step up at Championship level either, has he?
No, I seen him there. He was in the McKenna Cup, right? Well, he seemed to be carrying a bit of weight, didn't he? He's very kind of that stocky build, and obviously the relationship between himself and Mickey, I don't know, is it a positive one or not? Because he's the same. He's coming and going, isn't he? And he went
last year and got back in. Mickey Hart. You have to give Mickey Hart his due. He doesn't hold a grudge.
No, he brings them back in.
He brings them back in, doesn't he? Even if he falls out with lads. And from Mickey's interviews, you might think he'd be a tick sort of a man. That he doesn't, though. He's like a young. He's a player's man, I think, in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
James Durkin, 1-3 off the bench. We talked about him, 66 minutes. Maybe I was a bit hard on him, I don't want to run him down. But he's another one who probably, for me, might be a little bit off Championship level if you want to be, you know, looking at All-Irelands or anything like that. But 1-3 in coming on 66 minutes, unbelievable. Michael Hurley scored 5 points, come on at half time, not bad. So if he played the full game, he would have got 10, judging by my maths. He came on for Young Gore off the under-21s. The Cork subs, incidentally, scored 9 points for Cork. Connor Turbitt scored 1-6 from play, by sensational 1-6. Some start. He's 20 years old. He's corner forward. He's same age as Rian O'Neill. He's a bit light, but he's got loads of potential, is my information on him. And he's obviously very accurate. But like I said, it's not like Armagh need any inside force. How can they? Jamie Clark's back. Mernon's back. Rian O'Neill. Stephen Campbell. Come on, there's more than that. There's Nugent can play in the half forward line or the full forward line.
Mernon.
Yeah, I said Mernon there, did I not? No.
Really.
you've tuned out at this stage. It's a long show, Conor.
Oh, get on with it.
Kieran Lillis, lads, 1-3, including a mark. 1-2 of it came from play. This is a midfielder gone in full forward. Immediately we're saying this is very impressive. The 1-2 of it was off his left foot, including the equalising goal off his left foot. Club player of the year in Laois last year and has been made Laois captain. That's impressive stuff, right?
We know
I'm a big Kieran Lillis fan. He's a club mate of mine. But for him to go in full forward, and to be honest, there was a little bit of desperation, I thought, about that. Lillis never would have played in the forwards. And he's not an unbelievably fetching midfielder. Like, he's not known for fetching over his head. He's more of a footballer. He's got a good football brain. So I was thinking, what are they doing with that? That's a bit like, you know, just putting someone in there for sake of it. But 1-3 is some return for him.
Anything is possible in quirky time.
Yeah, that's it. So we'll have to get that going. So who will get performance this weekend? Connor Turbitt,
you never give Keith Byrne, I mentioned from Leitrim, 9 points up in Derry as well.
Keith Byrne, see, I was going to put him in, but he got 1 from play only. And 8 frees, they could be tap overs. He might not have been fouled.
No disrespect to Leitrim.
But I did,
we're
like,
not going to win All-Ireland anyway.
You can't be saying things like that. One thing about Bernie I did read, and his interview after the match, is he was very disappointed with the draw, which just shows kind of the headspace Leitrim potentially are in at the moment. You know, like, I mean, imagine,
which
would be very good, very positive to be reading that. Performance of the weekend has to go to Conor Turbitt, 1-6 from play. Maybe it was his debut. Quite the start to his career. That's debut, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, Conor Turbitt, congratulations, performance of the weekend, and we'll leave it there, and we'll be back on Thursday, so we'll talk to you then. Good luck.
Finished yet, it took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and
They regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their houses for 10 years.